Hi, friends! Join us as we dive into the themes, metaphors, and foreshadowing of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. We are your hosts, Leah,
Sarah,
Tabby,
and whether you're a new viewer or a longtime fan, welcome to Becoming Buffy.
Hey guys, welcome back to Becoming Buffy. Today we're talking about Scooby Secrets Out of My Mind. And I don't know, I've been thinking a lot. I have notes to talk about this episode, but I'm so tired of talking about Riley, and we still have like Into the Woods coming.
We have like six more episodes with him.
Yeah, we still have quite a few episodes. Yes.
I'm just waiting for him to mess up so we actually have something to talk about. Because at this point, I feel like a jerk because it feels like we're talking about the same things over and over again. And yeah. I feel like people who haven't watched the show are probably like, oh my God, they're banging on Riley so much. But it's like, no, you don't
we have
get
reason.
It. Like, the reason why we're devoting time to this is because it shows an ultimate pattern mm-hmm. that leads up to when he starts to like cheat on her. Like, It all is crucial, but it sounds like we're nitpicking, but we're not. It's kind of like the same thing with Xander, where it's like before we kind of would always point out why him and Buffy, like they had this weird relationship and why he felt entitled to her and all this stuff. And people were probably like, oh my gosh, we get it. But it all, we had to point it out so that when he chooses to lie over Angel, it's to show that that isn't out of character. It's because he feels like he is entitled to protect, quote unquote, Buffy.
Right. Yeah. What we're trying to do is establish a pattern of behavior because it helps explain once Riley and Buffy have that big conversation and Into the Woods and Riley starts to do this stuff. It explains his reasons for why he's doing it, explains like how we got there. And I think that's really important, but it's also exhausting on the other end when it's like, why are we talking so much about Riley when I want to kind of move on to Glory, move on to Dawn, move on to all the other stuff. But this is where we are, guys. All right, so this episode talks a ton about Riley's insecurity and ultimately leaving Buffy, or at least foreshadows it, foreshadows Dawn as not Joyce's. We have Joyce passing out because of the pressure on her brain and her telling Dawn, who are you? And we have Willow's magic kind of foreshadowing the darkness that comes up in season 6, and then a little bit of that in season 5. And also, this is kind of, I guess you could say, where Buffy really takes off and starts, even though it's one-sided at this point, with Spike's dream sequence. So it's amazing how we've gotten bits and pieces of that leading up to this, and how season 5 is just doing a masterful job of building upon itself as it's moving forward. So I don't know that we necessarily have anything groundbreaking to talk about that we haven't already kind of mentioned in the past, but there's still a few things that I think will be kind of interesting to talk about. Also, this part of the season, and I think I've said this before, but I'm going to say it again. This part of the season really kind of hurts because Buffy's doing so well in life. And ironically, this is the most balanced she ever will be in achieving both her personal and slaying lives, like the epitome and the peak of what it means to be Buffy. She's the strongest she's ever been. She's happily with a human guy, or at least supposedly happy with a guy. And her family life is going, you know, relatively good. And it's interesting because typically in the seasons, the season has always started out with something that Buffy has to overcome, something Buffy has to like deal with from the previous season. And then as the season goes on, things escalate. But then you get to kind of like peak Buffy at the very end, where she's, you know, strong and she makes a choice that's like, you know, going to make her like even more strong, or it's empowering or whatever, even if it's devastating. And this season is different because it kind of inverts that, where she starts off really strong. And then just as the season goes on, she's broken down until in The Gift, she's like, I'm going to die for Dawn because I love her, but also because I am tired. It's hard because so much of the stuff that happens to Buffy in the season is not her fault. so much of it is out of her control. And the show goes out of its way to show how Buffy was sacrificing so much before she ultimately decides to sacrifice herself for Dawn. And that's one of the more devastating parts of the season, I think. All right. So the first thing we want to talk about is Riley's words about Buffy becoming so strong that she's untouchable. We actually have a similar conversation between, of all couples, Willow and Tara later on in this season, where Tara expresses how strong Willow is becoming and how it scares her. So in what's that episode? I forgot to write down the episode title. It's the episode where Tara gets her mind sucked out by Glory, and it's like towards the end. What is that called? I can't remember.
Something blood, right?
Tough love. It's tough love.
Tough love. Yeah.
Yeah. I had to look it up. I was like, I literally just like went and looked up the episode and all that stuff, but forgot to write it down. Yes, tough love. So we have that moment where Willow and Tara are talking, and Willow's expressing insecurity, feeling like Tara is so much more practiced in witchcraft and she's also been out longer. And Tara says, oh, but you're way beyond me in just a few. I mean, it frightens me how powerful you're getting. And then Willow says, that's a weird word. And Tara says, getting. And Willow says, it frightens you. I frighten you. And then Tara says, that's not what I meant. I meant impressive. And then Willow's like, well, you know, I know what a Freudian slip is. Don't you trust me? Tara says, with my life. Willow says, that's not what I mean. And then we kind of get this conversation that hints at the fact that Willow is becoming really powerful and Tara's not 100% comfortable with it. And we kind of see that in this episode, the moment when they're in the school looking for Riley and Willow's like, oh yeah, I took your little Tinkerbell spell and now it's like this ginormous thing. And we have that moment where Tara's like, oh. And after tough love, we have Willow, I owe you pain to Glory, because Tara gets her mind sucked by Glory. But then that's kind of dropped for the rest of the season. And then we get to season 6 and Willow's like mega souped up. And from the get-go, it's very obvious that she is advancing in a way that no one is really comfortable with and is not healthy. And we have obviously the whole thing of season 6. So I think it's interesting that they're laying the groundwork now and have all these Easter eggs here, even though they don't really do a whole lot with Willow in this season. And that's something I really love about this show is that you have to pay attention. There's Easter eggs everywhere. Mm-hmm. We also meet Ben this episode, which I completely forgot about.
Yeah, this early on.
I completely forgot about, dude. This is like one of the first times that we haven't spoiled a character right off the bat in a long time.
I forget about him, to be honest, until he's in the screen. And then I'm like, oh, yeah.
Well, I forget about him until like later on when him and Buffy actually start like kind of hanging out. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, it's Ben. Like for a while, I'm just like, oh, it's Doctor.
Yeah. I think Ben is really interesting and I'm excited to talk about him, but I love how they kind of do a similar thing with him that they do with Dawn, where we see him several episodes before the big reveal that him and Glory are the same, like in the same body. And you're all of a sudden like surprised. You're like, oh my gosh, like we know there's some sort of connection, but we don't know what it is. And then like the big reveal, it's kind of neat.
I will say Ben was probably one of the biggest twists of this show that I didn't mm-hmm. see coming. They did such a good job of just subtly bringing him in the show. And I mean, they do it so effortlessly that you don't really question it. Like, I kind of always just excuse it as like it's a low budget show. So they just get one actor to play the doctor and that was it. And then it was kind of like, it wasn't until him and Buffy started hanging out a lot where I was like, oh, is he going to be like more of a regular character? Like, that's kind mm-hmm. of interesting. And then it was like, before I knew it, he had this whole backstory with Glory that I just really didn't see coming.
Yeah, right. I'm actually really excited to hear what Liz has to say at the end of the season, because one of her predictions was Buffy's going to have an actual normal relationship with the guy because Riley didn't count because he was in the initiative. And they really like start to hint at Buffy and Ben being a thing. And I wonder if she's going to like think that that's, you know, Ben's the normal guy and the reveal that he's Glory. She's going to be like, what in the world? And also, like, in an episode entitled Out of My Mind, it really is neat that they introduce Ben, because we come to find out that Glory is living inside of Ben and she eats people's minds and has taken over Ben's life. All right, let's talk about Spike. So we talked about how since the beginning of the show, Spike has continually mixed up sex and violence, his love's bitch speech and lover's walk, his sexual innuendos. And All Things Philosophical had a really interesting question. They were like, is Spike's love for the Slayer more like Angelus's feelings for Buffy or Spike's feelings for Drusilla? What do you guys think?
I think it's like both and also neither. But I think in general, it's just when, as vampires, they can only, there is no love and care and tenderness. It's all obsession and passion and like
violence.
Like there is, I mean, even you think about the tenderness that Spike has for Dawn. It's never fully selfless because a part of him is always doing it because he wants Buffy to notice.
Right. Right.
And I think it's that whole idea of like good actions aren't really good actions if they're done for selfish reasons. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I have to remind myself so often in season 5 with Spike, because a lot of people argue the fact that season 5 doesn't really align with normal
like vampire lore.
Vampire lore in the show, mm-hmm. But it totally does when you think about the fact that like everything that Spike does, even the things that he thinks are selfless, are selfish.
Yeah.
And he, it's all like, he doesn't ever genuinely love Buffy until season 7. That's what I believe, is that season 5 and season 6, it's obsession, passion, and selfishness. It's, there is no thought of Buffy. It's all of what Buffy can satisfy in him, what Buffy can do for him. And it's not till season 7 when he actually has a soul that you start to show, like they start to see that remorse. And I know people have their issues with that and that's fine.
But that's what they were attempting to do for sure.
Right. But I think that it's the same thing with Angelus in the way that like Angelus obsessed over Buffy. Because Buffy made him feel human. And I think that Spike obsesses over Buffy, but not because she makes him feel human. It's because Buffy makes him feel a thrill, makes him feel powerful, because he feels like he can challenge her and go toe-to-toe. And it's the same thing like with Drusilla. Like he never loved Drusilla. He was obsessed with Drusilla. I mean, we
– You think he never loved her? You think he never loved her?
No.
I think the vampiric version of love.
Maybe. Sure. Yeah. It's the vampire version of love, but it's always selfish. Like at the end of the day, like he did love Drusilla, but it was always self-centered. So it was love because love can be selfish, but it wasn't a good version of love, you know? I don't think it's necessarily like them or dislike them. I think it's its own thing. But I think it is a recurring pattern of vampires are unable to love unselfishly.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And something you said there kind of just made me realize another parallel between Spike and Riley, when Riley talks about how he's like, you know, I have to have every crazy part of you or whatever. I think that the part that Spike is attracted to is also a part that that Riley is attracted to as well. And we're making those, they're making those comparisons. But also, I realized that Buffy is becoming more and more of a predator every day. Like we keep seeing like opening up with her on top of a mausoleum, like ready to pounce and all this stuff. And I think that the more that Buffy starts to look and like lean into her Slayer side, which we know is a part of a demon, which is also what Spike is, that is what starts to attract Spike more and more. And I don't think it's any sort of coincidence that this is the episode that Spike realizes he's infatuated with, and I say in quotations, in love with Buffy. And it's also the episode that we really see Buffy honing in on her predatory side. And I mean, the fact that he just is longing for a conquest, and we have that in Fool for Love, One Good Taste. And then we have that moment with, and I'll talk about it in a second, with Riley and Spike in Into the Woods, where Riley goes to kill Spike and they have that conversation where Spike tells Riley that woman, she needs monster in her man. Did you ever think that you were going to be the one? You're just the placeholder. You're the guy that's supposed to be here until she finds somebody else who has a little bit more monster in them. And I don't fully agree with Spike's interpretation because I don't think Spike fully gets Buffy, but they are making a very clear parallel because the monster, so-called part of Buffy, Riley is attracted to it, but he's also deeply intimidated by it as well. And it makes him insecure.
I think there is a truth to it, but not, like you said, not in the sense that Spike really thinks he's like eating in this moment. Like, it's like, for real, he's like, I really got her with this. But it's really ironic because, like, we find out in season 7 that Buffy has a demon part of her. She's like part demon. The Slayer is part of that. So, like, she's attracted to someone who, in essence, will understand her and will get her. So it's like this camaraderie, like calls to like. So her knowing in this relationship but not really addressing it fully, the fact that her and Riley will just intrinsically never fully understand each other. She might understand him a little bit more than he can understand her, only because she is human. She has been a human outside of being the Slayer, and he will never understand what it's like to be the Slayer. So it's not in the way that Spike is trying to say it, like she likes a darkness in her man. It's more of like, I need somebody who's going to the best of their ability, understand me.
Yes. Right.
So it's just not in the way he thinks.
Yeah. We all want to be fully seen and understood. Yeah. So Buffy needs someone who can understand that, but it's not like what Spike is saying, like she's drawn to like evilness and all this other stuff. No, she's not. She's just drawn to someone who understands what all she has to combat and what her nature is telling her she is, you know? Mm-hmm. And I know I read this in the spoiler-free like section, but I really, really like this quote. All Things Philosophical says, Spike has both an attraction to and a desire to conquer strong, beautiful women. He is a dual-natured creature, at once both man and demon. And like Angelus, he can't always separate these desires from each other. But in the past, the desire to kill was predominant in the pragmatic Spike. Now the chip prevents him from killing her, and his sexual desire and ability to display tender feelings have come to the forefront simply because his more aggressive natures have been suppressed. Which I think is just spot on. And I actually commented on someone's video on YouTube a long time ago about how I was like, Spike has mommy issues. And that is totally, totally validated by the time we get to Lies My Parents Told Me. And they were like, no, he doesn't. And they got so mad at me. And I was like, yes, he literally does. The show literally shows that he does. And I mean, I wanted to talk about how like he pulls out that gravestone. It's literally canon. He pulls out a gravestone and throws it, and it's his mom on it. And I know they're supposed to be like talking about like Riley, but they're also talking about Spike here too. And I think he takes out his mommy issues on desiring to conquer the strongest women around, and that happens to be the Slayer, and that's why he's gone after two Slayers in the past. So, it's interesting. I kind of can't wait for Fool for Love, because there's just so much that we're gonna have to talk about that. It's gonna be really interesting.
It's so soon, too.
I know. It's in like 3 episodes. 2 or 3 episodes, yeah. Because this is 4, so 3 episodes, yeah. Okay, and last but not least, let's talk about Riley again. I know we're all so excited. I know. But I kind of want to talk a little bit more about what I mentioned back in the spoiler-free section when I was talking about how the show is trying to convey that Buffy is in the wrong, and that comes to a head in Into the Woods. Who's the person that's portrayed as wrong in that episode, guys? And why do we hate that episode? It's Buffy, right? Like, it's not Riley. Riley's given a glorious send-off with beautiful, like one of the most beautiful pieces in the show, as he's in a helicopter and we get a close-up of his poor, sad face.
I just hate it because it's painted out as if, A, it's Buffy's fault that he's leaving, which you just said.
Yeah.
But it's also painted as if Buffy gives a frick about Riley leaving. She doesn't care. Like, and I know, I'm disagreeing with the writers. Like, what? No, look at your own work. Riley doesn't, Buffy does not care. Buffy wanted Riley gone, like, the minute season 5 started. Like, she was over it. She's been over it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't understand their character. We understand her.
Yeah, we understand her. So we have that moment where Graham says hyperadrenal overload and a bunch of stuff that sounds even worse. He, you know, his heart can't take it. We've been at him for weeks about it. And I had that quote by All Things Philosophical. They said, you know, when a human being faces danger, other challenges, adrenaline pushes the body into action. So the idea is that Riley's heart's being strained by being in a relationship with Buffy. Which, okay. And so I had written, are they trying to infer that at some point his heart is not going to be able to take Buffy not loving him as much as he loves her? So remember how even with the subplot of each episode, it all comes back to Buffy. And I talked about this last week, but this is a metaphorical, like this is metaphorically what Buffy is afraid will happen to her and what the show warns her against when it comes to relationships with Riley's and others, which is isolating yourself. And leading up to Into the Woods, it's the idea that Buffy pushes others away when in pain. And on the flip side, it foreshadows Riley not being able to take the pain of her not loving him like he does, and then the cheating and then him leaving. And I have a bone to pick with the writers with this, because the show consistently, like, you know, we have the dreaded empty places. We have the episode with the mask. Can't remember what it's called. Dead Man's Party. All of these episodes where they're like, Buffy's pushing people away. Buffy's isolating herself. Buffy's in pain and stuff. And I want to be like, writers, you keep the patriarchy keeps telling Buffy, the Watchers Council, everyone, you're the slayer, the only one. You have to be alone. Even Giles initially and Wesley are like, why do all your friends know? You're supposed to be by yourself and doing all of this. And so there's this constant push of you're alone. You have to do this alone, all this stuff. But then when she actually does try to go and process things alone and all that other stuff, they get on her and are like, whoa, 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 what you're doing is wrong. What you're doing is bad. And while I will not disagree that I do think Buffy closes herself off after Angel leaves, because I do think a part of her does. Who was the one, and I know I said this in the last episode, but who was the one that was like practically bullying Buffy into a relationship when she says, no, I don't think this will be wise? And then who's the one that's butt hurt when he's like, man, you aren't opening up to me and all this other stuff? Riley. So the writers wrote both of those things, and yet they're painting Buffy as in the wrong in this one. So again, I know I said all that. So I'm going to read a little bit of the conversation between Riley and Buffy from Into the Woods. Going to trigger everyone. So Riley says, I think when this thing started, it was just some stupid, immature game. I wanted to even the score after you let Dracula bite you. Buffy says, I did not let Dracula. And then he interrupts her and says, I know. On some level, I know that. But I was still spun. I don't know. I wanted to know what you felt. I wanted to know why Dracula and Angel have so much power over you.
And he's been saying that Angel's not the issue. What episode? Yeah. Did he say that recently?
Yeah, he said that in...
Wasn't this episode?
This episode or the episode before with the replacement? He said
Angel like wasn't the issue. I'm like, bitch, yeah. I think he always has been.
Yeah, right. This is all coming back to the writers don't know how to write this stupid man and are just writing him
signals.
Yeah, we are, and so is Buffy, and yet Buffy's the problem. No, guys. So Buffy shakes her head and says, "You so don't get it." No, he doesn't. Riley says, "I wanted to get it, Buffy. I wanted to get you." Buffy says, "So this is my fault? Hey, gee, Buffy's so mysterious. I think I'll go out and almost die. I think I'll go and let some other..." And then she stops herself. And Riley says, "This isn't your fault. It's mine." Okay, good. Baby steps. I feel like hell for what I put you through. It's just these girls. And then Buffy goes, "Vampires. Killers." And he says, "They made me feel something, Buffy, something I didn't even know I was missing until..." And Buffy goes, I can't hear this. And then he grabs her arm and she gives him a death glare and he says, "You need to hear this." And she pulls her arm away and she says, fine, tell me about your whores. Tell me what on earth they were giving you that I can't." And he goes, "They needed me."
Mm-hmm. No, she says, I have this whole monologue memorized. It's traumatizing.
And she says, "They needed your money. It wasn't about you." And then he says, "No, on some basic level, it was about me. My blood," there's that word again, "my body, when they bite me, it was beyond passion. They wanted to devour me, all of me." Buffy says, "Why are you telling me this?" He says, "It wasn't real. I know it was just physical. But the fact that I craved it, that I kept going back, even if it was fleeting, they made me feel like they had such a hunger for me." And Buffy says, "I don't make you feel that way. How on earth can you compare me to that? How can you tell me you understand what those vampires are feeling? You're in a passion to them. You're a snack." And he says, "No, I know what they're feeling when they bite me, because I feel it every time we're together. It's like the whole world falls away and all there is you." And then Buffy's like, "You're telling me you don't think I think the same way about you? How dare you tell me what I feel?" Buffy is saying all the right things here, and he is continually gaslighting her. And then, you know, it goes on. We'll get to it when we get to it. But I really like that they have that important moment where he says, you need to hear this. And that is the writers speaking through Riley. And it's the writers once again pointing fingers at Buffy and saying, you are the reason why Riley leaves. You are the reason why you're like all these people are walking away. You're pushing people away. You are the problem. And that is a real problem for me because that is completely antithetical to the core tenets of the show, or supposedly.
Riley.
I know. Yeah.
He is deeply Riley. Triggering.
Yeah. He is deeply triggering. So anyway, so that is all I have for that. And we will definitely be talking more about it as it goes on. Hopefully we can kind of take a break from the Riley arc a little bit and address it in full. Be prepared, ladies and gentlemen, for a full rundown and workup of Riley when Into the Woods comes. Until then, I will be holding my peace because I don't want to give this guy a single more breath. I'm kind of over him.
Yeah, I'm so over talking about him, dude. I can't.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I think that's everything. Anyway. All right. So a shorter episode today, but I feel like it was just more build up from the last episode. Next episode is going to be fantastic. We finally get to talk about Glory. We finally Woo-hoo. Find out who Dawn is. It's just going to be so good.
It's going to be banger after banger after that one.
Yeah. And then we have family. And
then we have a brief intermission with Into the Woods and then back to bangers.
Then we don't have to talk about Riley for a whole season. Hallelujah.
And then just one more episode, he comes back. And then after that, never again.
Interesting how they have the comparisons of Spike and Riley again. Oh, yeah. Anyway, whatever. Okay, I'm done. All right. Thanks so much for listening, guys. Thanks so much for your support. Definitely let us know your thoughts about the spoilers for this episode. Let us know if there are any spoilers that you guys want to hear us talk about. And oh, wait, before I end, I actually had something I was going to tell you guys. I don't know if I've told you guys this before, and this is really random, but did you guys know that Joss was originally throwing around the idea of having it be revealed that instead of having Ben in the season, it was going to be revealed that Xander was the other half of Glory?
What? How? What? When?
So he was going to have it the entire season where we wouldn't see Glory and Xander in the same scene together. And then it was going to be revealed that this entire time Xander has been the walking shell for Glory and she only just manifested it herself or something. And that was weird. When
that would have been way less cohesive. Like it would have made no sense.
Well, the reason why was when he was originally planning for the gift to be the finale of the show and they didn't know they were going to be renewed. His plan was for it to be this massive showdown between all of Team Angel coming in and you got to see everybody interacting. And what would have happened is I think Willow would have gone absolutely berserk because she would have realized that Xander was actually part of Glory or whatever. And so then we would have gotten full dark Willow. She would have teamed up with Glory and Buffy would have been forced to kill both Xander and Willow.
That would have been way too much to fit into one season. That's so okay, much.
But hear me out, because they were supposed to kill Xander in Dirty Girls. Yeah. Let's not be too scared to kill him off here. I really feel like we're playing a little too safe. Like Xander, yeah, out of like, all of
kill
them,
kill Xander.
No, but like, imagine the stakes of like actually losing someone of the core four, like yeah. the genuine core four people.
Yeah,
like that would have brought in so many stakes. Not necessarily this storyline, season five, because that's way too messy and too much. Because then we'd have a whole two seasons of no Willow and Xander. There's also not enough buildup of Willow for her to like go down that path. Like I will say it, out of all the storylines, season six, hers is like the most like realistic about right. where she leads. But like, why are we playing Xander a little too safe here? Like we could lose him and it'd be fine, you know?
Yeah, I still maintain Giles should have died at the end of season six. That's what I and said. Xander should have died when Caleb killed him in season seven.
No, I think Giles should have died like as a sacrifice in season seven, like the finale, kind of like as like a metaphor of like her going into her adulthood, not needing like the father figure behind. Yeah.
Yeah. But also, If Xander had actually died, it would have made so much sense why everybody throws her out in empty places. Yeah. That I would have understood a little bit more.
It's just an eye. Okay. He's another one.
It's just an eye. It's just Xander's eye. If it was, you know, like no, I Buffy's agree. Eye.
Someone should have died, bro. Like, as much as I love this show, they played it way too safe.
Or Dawn. As much as I love Dawn, like, Dawn or Giles. Xander.
Like, he's ancient anyways. Like, he really could have died.
And he was pissing me off in season 7.
No, for real. Like, he needed kind of, like, a death to, like, redeem him, honestly.
Yeah, I would have 100%, I know this sounds awful, I would have 100% preferred Giles to have died in season 6.
And redeeming himself too.
And
oh, you're talking about season
versus,
6. Oh.
Season 6 versus the crap that we got in season 7. It also would have been a major impact for Willow's arc too, knowing that she killed Giles. Also, I can't wait to talk about the parallels between Giles' magic use and him coming back to help Willow in her arc, because I think that would have just been perfect if Willow had killed him. And then, because guys, I cannot think of a single moment in season 7 with the one sole moment in the finale where you see all the gang together before Buffy walks down and goes
that
to
Giles
them.
Doesn't kind of like suck.
That Giles doesn't suck. Moment where I was like,
you know, in the beginning when he does the whole like Gandalf thing with Willow when they're in England.
Oh yeah, okay, sure. But like once he comes back, there's no point to him, and honestly, he's the worst.
He's honestly either extremely on the side, or when he is in the forefront, he's pissing me off.
He doesn't feel like himself at all. I'm like, what did you do with Giles? They should have revealed that they should have revealed that the Reapers or whatever had actually killed him, and that was the first impersonating him the entire time.
Yes. Like, because they kind of teased that, and then they're like, kidding, and then they moved on.
They went nowhere with it. It was stupid. So anyway, this is a massive rabbit hole, but we were talking about Ben, and I meant to bring it up, and then I forgot, so... Anyway, now that I've like – I told this to Leia in our season 1 recap and her mind was like blown. She couldn't talk for 5 minutes because it really is like so radically different from what they did in The Gift.
Mm-hmm. So anyway. Honestly, their ideas of the things that they could do or couldn't do is insane. Like the show could have been so different.
Yeah. I mean, look at the comics. The only reason the comics are as bonkers as they are and the show is as tempered as it is because of budget. If Joss Whedon was given an unlimited budget – the show would not have been as good as it was.
Honestly,
because he would
thank
have done
goodness.
Crazy things.
Because rather than like doing all this high budget stuff, he's forced to kind of deal with like the characters. Yeah. Because every single storyline you've told me about where it's like almost been that and they decide not to, I'm like, thank the good Lord. Like you know, you hear about something, you're like, dang, that would have been so freaking sick. Like every single time, I'm like, no, thank God. Like, oh my word. Like season 4 is a mess, don't get me wrong. But like, my goodness, if we got the actual season 4, Sarah's on the side of her wanting the original version of season 4 ending. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, but I don't know.
Wait, what do you mean by the original ending of season 4?
Like with Maggie Walsh.
Maggie Walsh?
Yeah.
Oh, really? You don't know if you would want Maggie Walsh
like her. And I just don't think they would have done it well because she was kind of flat to me.
I think that she could have been compelling if they actually were going to go somewhere with her. But again, I think they were hampered by Joss's mommy issues and he just had a personal vendetta and wanted to see his mother killed on screen.
And then having Dark – every time they keep saying that they're going to have Dark Willow season 4 and season 5. I'm so glad they didn't. Season 6 was definitely the time to have Dark Willow. But like season 4 would have been way too rushed.
Yeah, I agree. It was too soon. So anyway, okay. Back to ending the episode. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Let us know your thoughts on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Tumblr at Becoming Buffy Podcast, and email us at becomingbuffypodcast@gmail.com. If you would like to support us and listen to our spoiler recap for each of these episodes, you can join our Buy Me a Coffee membership at buymeacoffee.com/becomingbuffy. Shout out and special thank you to our producers, Kashan, CJ, Paul, Chrissy, Kate, and Sophie. Thank you to our listeners, and we will talk to you all next time.